It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and The Sunday Times. Now with goals.
Hello, I'm Alison Rudd. I'm joined in the studio by Julien Laurens, Clive Petty, and down the line, still rubbing after sun lotion onto his nose after his day at a sun-drenched Anfield, we have Oliver Kay. A reminder that you can see all the goals and the rest of the highlights from every Premier League game before anyone else simply by downloading the Times app to your smartphone. We will be discussing City's trip to the Emirates, Everton's win at the Cottage, how Liverpool tore into Spurs, and for a piece of public service broadcasting, we'll take a look at the Nations League. But first, a quick word about Chelsea, seeing how both Jules and I were at Selhurst Park.
Lovely turn by Bolasie, back to Ward again. Oh, it's gone in! It's an own goal, I think, by John Terry. Ledley's going to claim it, but I think the Chelsea captain got the final decisive touch. And Chelsea, who can't afford to slip up here, are a goal down to Crystal Palace.
Jules, I don't know if you agree with me, but I've never quite seen so much or heard so much politicking after a football match. This seemed to be a treatise by Jose Mourinho. I was right all along. I don't have the players. I don't have the resources for a team to make an assault on the title. And look, everybody, I was completely right. They lack the character. I need a new striker. He was almost, and I don't think it's much of an exaggeration to say, he seemed quite pleased that he'd been proven right.
I was exactly going to say that. I think he was disappointed by the defeat and the performance, but when he came to speak to us after the game, he looked like he's proven his point, and he was actually quite chuffed about it, and he was saying, you see, I told you, now it's too late, it doesn't depend on us enough, and we're too far, blah, 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 all that things, but you're right, he looked... I told you, you got carried on and I didn't, and I told you we couldn't win it and this and that. And it's very, I find it really sad.
Sad?
Yeah, sad in a way that after a defeat like that, the only thing he finds to say is, I told you I was right, we couldn't win it. You know, I just think like if I was a Chelsea fan, I would be quite disappointed by his reaction after the game.
Oh, I think quite a lot of Chelsea fans are also relieved. I think they prefer the idea that they're the underdogs in some way and they're chasing. I don't think they felt very comfortable with this status of leading the table and it's all about them.
Maybe, but I still think they could have won the league, definitely. And maybe if he had behaved differently in a way that he always claimed that they couldn't win it and everything. And I don't know what kind of message that sent to his players and his dressing room, but if he'd been a bit more positive, I really genuinely think that they could have won it.
Right, we're not going to ask anyone else because they weren't there.
And in here towards Arteta. There's a menace about Arsenal here. Rosicki. Gibbs joins the attack. Flamini! It's 1-1! Arsenal right back in this game!
Right, let's move to the draw, Arsenal-Man City game. City kicked off against Arsenal and they knew Chelsea had slipped up. Vincent Kompany said it was not a bad point on Twitter. I personally would disagree with that. I think Arsenal were wobbly in the first half, and that's when City should have really gone for the jugular and put the game out of sight. Clive, would you agree with me? Is that a wasted opportunity by City?
Yeah, possibly. They didn't. When they started off quite positively, but Arsenal at least learnt their lesson from a week ago and set up a bit more solidly for the challenge that faced them this time round. But I don't think Arsenal from 1 week or just during their bad run have suddenly become the sort of team that you should actually just go there and expect to turn them over. They're still a good team. You know, I think normally you would come away from the Emirates with a point. I think you would say that's, you know, that is a good point. And they didn't take advantage of their first half display, and Arsenal did have a sort of half an hour in the second half where they were by easily the better team. So I think at the end of the day, a good point is probably what it was.
Ooh. Oliver?
It's certainly one of the one of City's tougher games between now and the end of the season. The problem is they have got quite a few tough games. Southampton, Everton, Liverpool, obviously. They are going to have, I mean, they can't be thinking as they go into these games, well, a draw will be enough today. I mean, City need to get wins on the board. I mean, everybody's looking at the games in hand that they have and thinking that, well, I think everybody outside Liverpool would probably say City are just about favourites, but they do have to win those games. They can't just draw. So, I mean, the fact is we don't know yet whether it's a good result.
No, true. Jules, what did Arsenal do in the second half to improve? How did they do that?
I think physically they were, which is, you know, a bit surprising, I think, but they were on top physically. I thought City played obviously on Tuesday like Arsenal, so they on that level it was the same. But I think physically they really dropped in the second half, City. You could see they looked tired, their passing was not as good. Even David Silva was not as good as in the first half. And I really wish that Pellegrini had done some changes earlier on, because I really think that the team needed that. And on the other hand, Arsenal were much, much stronger physically, probably because they were at home and they couldn't afford the defeats, you know, in front of their own fans. And I think that it was probably just a question of managing City's starting 11 better by Pellegrini in terms of making changes earlier on than he did, I think, and they could have probably won it. But I think, yeah, physically the difference was in the second half.
And they were more sensible in their defending, perhaps, Clive?
Yeah, they didn't try and play so far forward up the pitch as they had done in the previous games. Although, having said that, I still think there were times where their fullbacks were caught quite far forward at times, which is probably more than they should have done. But yeah, they had the more solid look about them. They looked as if they had bothered to, you know, look back at what happened in the last couple of weeks.
And what are they now? Are they a team that are, as it stands, are they a team hoping for the title? Or are they a team worried that they won't even make the Champions League? Which are they?
They're a team going for the Wenger Cup, as they kind of normally do, a top four finish. And I think that is what they will achieve. I think the top four are as they are now. Everton are in a great moment, but I think Arsenal are going to stay there.
And Ollie, there are rumours that if Wenger does not manage to pull off the FA Cup this season and they don't finish fourth, that has to be the end. Is that a reasonable assumption?
You could make a case either way for saying that it would be a good time. They win the FA Cup, he gets his happy ending, which isn't easy to achieve, and you know, he can go off as a winner. Or you could say, if they don't win anything, well, that's the final straw. But I mean, I think they should stick with him. I think he should stick with them as long as he's enjoying it. And I don't think this has been a bad season for Arsenal. I know expectations were raised and then briefly dashed, and I think they would probably be looking at what Liverpool are doing and thinking, well, who can do it while not necessarily shopping at the top end of the market and not spending shed loads on wages, why can't we? But I think what Liverpool are doing is slightly exceptional. No doubt we'll come back onto that. But if Arsenal were to win the FA Cup and finish in the top four, that would surely be progress, wouldn't it? And Wenger would, in my opinion, be entitled to stay or go as he pleases.
Well, I know I'm going to contradict myself here, but what if Everton, by any strange stretch of the imagination, did sneak into that fourth place? Would the FA Cup actually be good enough? I mean, would that make him a winner? It means, like, after so many years of successive Champions League qualifications, it's slightly ironic that he actually ends up with a trophy, whereas the trophy he lords more over that is the one he doesn't get, which is the Champions League qualification.
He's had that thrown back at him so many times that come on, fourth place isn't a trophy, it's the FA Cup you want to win. I think if they got it the other way around, if they won the FA Cup and finished fifth, if you found everyone sort of saying that's not good enough, you needed to finish in the champion, you needed a top four, the FA Cup's no good, I think he would be entitled to think.
I'm not really saying that. I'm just using his kind of logic, really. I mean, does that actually enable him, as you say, to walk away as yeah, that's great.
I don't think he's that. What do you think?
I don't think
he's the sort of bloke that would take a romantic thing like the FA Cup, where they're expected to win the FA Cup, aren't they? So to walk away with the FA Cup, I don't think he's the sort of man
Newcastle
that would think, wow, look at me, I'll walk off into the sunset.
Arsenal clinched top four on the last day of the season, and you know, their players were celebrating a lot and got a lot of stick from other clubs' fans for celebrating a lot in front of the fans for finishing fourth, but it's nothing compared to winning the FA Cup. You could say it's a better achievement in some ways to finish fourth over the course of the season in the Premier League, but it's a far more resonant success to win the FA Cup, and they should be capable of doing both, because I think what Everton are doing is fantastic, but Arsenal do have an advantage points wise, and they will feel, as long as they can avoid defeat at Goodison, that they will be in the top four. But they do sort of make it hard for themselves at times, Arsenal, to finish in the top four, and they are a far better team with Flamini.
Here's Lukaku and Leighton Baines outside him. Baines has done well, pull it back. Mirallas, Heitinger, might have been a handball in there, it'll fall for Naismith anyway, and that wraps it up for Everton.
Well, let's move on to the team that could whisk away that fourth place finish, which is Everton, who won with a rather fine second half display at Craven Cottage. Roberto Martinez, he seems to be the master of tinkering during a game. He makes great substitutions. Fulham, I think most people would agree, were spirited. They looked quite good. They created chances. And it was all about Everton and Roberto Martinez just seeing it wasn't going to plan and making those changes.
He is proving himself to be an astute tactician, it has to be said. It's testament as well to the kind of reserves of strength that Everton have, I think, that he has the ability to change those things around. I mean, who was it? Came with Morales and Naismith. I mean, Morales, if you can put him on the bench in the first place, I think he's a fine player. I'm not quite sure why he wasn't on the bench, whether that was tactical or not. But the fact that both he and Naismith came on and had such a devastating effect on the game is a very positive thing for the strength of Everton, and shows that I think Martinez is proving that he's up there with, you know, I think they were saying there was something that his substitutes have scored as many goals as substitutions made by Mourinho in games this season. And so, you know, if he's hailed as a great tactician, so Martinez should take all the plaudits that are coming to him, really.
I mean, Naismith, he's just, I don't know. Every time I see him, maybe it's just when I see him, but whenever I see him, I think, wow, who are you? Oh, yeah, I remember. You're good.
And I think Martinez deserves some credit the way he changed Naismith as well. If you compare him to last season, for example, it's his brother, it's his twin. You know, it's not possible that he's the same player as he was last season or even the seasons before. And I think it's credit to Martinez, who, in my opinion, has done everything perfect, apart from maybe the game at Liverpool where I think he got the tactics wrong and they got battered. But apart from that game, I think almost everything he's done this season, from the recruitment in the summer, even the recruitment in January with McGeady, for example, but everything from start to finish has been almost perfect, and that's why they are where they are. And turning Naismith into a super sub match winner player, which 12 months ago, if I told you that, you would have said, who? Steven? Yeah. No way. I think that deserves a lot of credit for Martinez as well.
Oliver, we've spoken about how it's probable that Arsenal will hold on to the fourth spot, but it would be nice, wouldn't it, if Everton could break into that top four? And would you think they could cope with it?
I wouldn't really worry about whether they would be able to cope with it. I think it'd be brilliant if Everton did get to the European Cup, and it's been a long time since they have. I mean, they had the qualifier in 2005 and got knocked out quite controversially by Villarreal. They obviously didn't get in when they won the league in the mid-80s twice. And it's, you know, it would be a romantic story to have Everton back in the Champions League or back in the European Cup. It would be fantastic. I would absolutely relish going to Goodison for a Champions League night. It would be fantastic, like it is at Anfield, and like it will be next season at Anfield, presumably.
And it would be another nail in the David Moyes coffin, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, it was always felt that there was a glass ceiling at Everton when Moyes was there, and to be honest, I think there was, and I don't really subscribe to this sort of slightly revisionist view that Moyes did a bad job at Everton. I think Moyes did a fantastic job at Everton, but maybe after, you know, 12 years of just hitting the same point, maybe if you then get the appointment right and get somebody who can lead players to believe that there isn't a glass ceiling and get them to perform above themselves and take it to a new level, then it's amazing. I think he has done a sensational job, Martinez, and it's, I mean, I don't think it's damning of David Moyes. I think it shows what strong foundations he built over the way that Martinez has taken it on is fantastic.
Like I said, it's another nail in the David Moyes coffin. What do we think of the way that Felix Magath is coping with Fulham and trying to haul them out of the bottom three? He seems to have faith in very young players who have very little experience, but on the other hand, the first half display at least was vibrant and it did look briefly like they might get a result. Okay, let's forget the history of why he's there. It is slightly ridiculous that there's a new manager with no Premier League experience there, but given that he is there, what is he doing the right things to try and haul them out?
I don't really know what he could do to haul them out. I don't think there is a way of hauling Fulham out. I'm sorry, that sounds like a bit heresy in front of you, Alison, but I just think they're doomed. And I'd be interested to find out what some of his more experienced, I mean, you know, as well as the intriguingly named Moussa Dembélé, the other Moussa Dembélé, played, and I forget the name of the other young guy who came on as a sub, but I'd be interested to see what Darren Bent and the likes who you can't actually get in that team, who isn't experienced, try and just, I'd love to know what is going on there, that Felix Magath has taken a look at this and just gone for the kids, as it were, and putting their faith in such a situation.
On the other hand, they're
or is
running.
He just thinking, well, we're going down anyway?
No, let's just look at the other side. The run-in is they have home games and against Norwich, Hull and Palace. It could be a cauldron at the cottage, and this, it could...
Oliver, stop it.
It could be quite an amazing end of season finale for them, Julian, could it not? Oh, Julian, I've never seen anyone look so cynical ever.
Because it's you, I agree with you. I think they can do it. I think Magath probably has the character and the temper to spur them on and to achieve and to manage to save them up. And I think I agree with Clive. He's still doing some weird things with his squads, but at least he's got an idea and he's going for it. And we'll see at the end of the season if it worked or not. I hope for them it does. But that running is very important. You said, you know, the crowd on Sunday looked really, really up for it. You know, they believe as well that they can stay up, which is very important, especially for those three key home games against, like, you know, team just above them or not far from them. So, yeah, I'll agree with you. I think they can do.
Final word, Ollie. What would it take? What does it need for Fulham to escape?
Well, those three home games, I mean... They do present them with some kind of opportunity, but they don't look at the moment like a team who's going to take that opportunity. They don't look like a team that is going to keep a clean sheet, although they did against Newcastle, didn't they? But they've conceded 73 goals. That is 27 more than Sunderland. Fulham just can't defend, and they've had three different managers this season. None of them have managed to make Fulham look remotely solid, remotely resilient, or remotely organised, really. And you can say that Martin Jol probably wasn't the right manager to take them into the season because he'd been struggling. I think a malaise had set in. Muhlenstein, I thought, was a weird appointment, a naive appointment, but just at the point where it seemed like he might have a slight chance of turning things around and settling on a different way, he got the sack, replaced by Magath, and it just looks like a completely regrettable season, doesn't it? It looks like they've made all the wrong decisions at a boardroom level. They bought poorly, you know, drifting aimlessly and sort of quite meekly towards relegation.
Which would mean when they stay up, we'll all be saying, what a miracle.
Liverpool have started games very quickly this season. The opposite has been true for Spurs. Now Glenn Johnson. Oh, it's a decent ball across that Yunus Kabul has contrived to put into his own net. It's taken less than 2 minutes for Liverpool to find the breakthrough. It's a calamitous own goal from Yunus Kabul, and it's one that, as things stand, puts Liverpool top of the table.
So let's move to Anfield, where the sun shone and the goals were scored. We will come on to the free-scoring team that is Liverpool, but the most astonishing, I just have to get this off my chest really, the most astonishing thing that happened this weekend was that Tim Sherwood decided he wants to be so much the opposite of a clipboard manager that he went to Anfield without even bothering to watch footage of the heavy defeat that AVB suffered at the hands of Liverpool at White Hart Lane, and he thought that was the right way to approach the game. And the other thing that didn't make any sense at all was that he has said quite recently, Tim Sherwood, that the fact that he is passionate and says what he feels and will have a go at the players if he doesn't feel they're giving enough, that has reaped rewards and they have been playing better. And for some reason he decided, therefore, it was clever to sit in the stands and not come down to the touchline and tell them to up their game. A complete set of illogical managerial decisions there. So, Clive, to you, given that setup, it was a bit easy for Liverpool, wasn't it?
Disgustingly easy. I mean, they might as well have not sent anybody out there with much resistance that Spurs put up. I mean, and absolutely right, those shots from the tunnel. I hope his lawyers aren't listening, but if Jan Vertonghen, if he hadn't got injured, I suspect he would have tried to have got himself sent off, because he just didn't give the air of a bloke who wanted to be there, who thought there was any reason for being at
that
stadium.
Well, you know your Spurs, Clive. What Vertonghen was the most praised defender last season.
Yeah.
Everyone was gushing about how lucky Spurs were to have him. What has gone wrong?
I don't know. I suspect the sort of either the change in, well, the same sort of managerial setups from what he was told to play like under ABB to Sherwood hasn't helped him. He doesn't like being played out of position. That's fairly obvious. You know, when he's stuck out in the fullback positions, he really seems to resent that. And he just is an air of a bloke who thinks, I'm not quite sure how long he's got left in his contract, but he really thinks he should be somewhere else now because the top four carrot isn't there anymore. Yeah, there's a World Cup in the summer. I suspect he wants to thinks he should be in a team that makes him look a dance like, you know, just look a bit better. But at that same token, it's a responsibility to yourself. You've got to show some willingness and some, to use a Mourinhoism, some balls yourself to get in there. And there was absolute total lack of that from Tottenham. And to give Sherwood his due, he's absolutely right. For the farcical start after 2 minutes, no coach. That everything has gone out the window if you start a sluggishly.
Well, what exactly has gone out the window if you haven't even sat down with the players and showed them footage of what went wrong last time?
Well, look, I assume he did say something, even if it wasn't to show them. It may well have been, don't show them. It may have been an idea not to show them that 5-0, because you don't want to be reminded. The idea being, look, you know you lost 5-0 last time. I don't need to tell you about that. You don't need to know how bad you were for that one. What I want is to not repeat that. Go out there and show that 5-0 was just a complete abnormality. It didn't happen. But the exact opposite happened. They did turn up as if, oh, for God, we got done 5-0 by this lot last time, didn't we? Sort of like, you know, well, luckily it is we're going to lose again, isn't it? And then within 2 minutes, the most farcical bit of defending. I mean, you know, even me watching on the telly saw Johnson. I was going, Johnson is going to run down. How Eriksen didn't see that, I have no idea. And it was just, the whole thing, it just summed up. That first own goal just summed up. And from then on, you think, we're not getting anything out of this one. It was laborious. There was no guile. There was no urgency. Even in the moments where there was about a 10 or 15 minute period, I think, in that first half where they showed that Spurs had the majority of possession, but did what with it? They did nothing. They just passed it across the front of Liverpool.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Paul, again, there was no sort of urgency of actually trying to take the game to them. And I'm not quite sure whether that's the players or that they're not responding to Sherwood, or as you say, Sherwood up in the stand isn't going to influence. He's tried I don't know what's left him. He's tried the gilet throwing. He's tried the distance up in the stands. I'll be interested to see what he comes out with next.
Jules, I mean, it's that performance might sort of be the last straw as far as Daniel Levy's concerned. I mean, I was speaking to Tony Pulis in the week in the build-up to the game against Chelsea, and he was saying what you do is you take clips from the previous game. So he took the game at Stamford Bridge in December, which Crystal Palace lost, but you take the clips that matter, the things you think you can improve on, learn from, and you put them together in a package for the players. You do You have to look. That's the advantage of having played them before. You look at what you've done and what you could do better. And I think for him to be so, for Sherwood to be so open about not wanting to take that approach and then delivering that performance, can Levy still have faith in him, do you think?
I don't think Levy never really had any faith in him, to be fair.
No, he did before he became a manager, because he thought he was potentially a very good manager.
Maybe. I wouldn't even trust him with my five-year-old team, Tim Sherwood. I think he's a young Harry Redknapp. He knows nothing about tactics. He doesn't care about tactics. He's all about, you know, talking to the players and like, getting angry at them when they're not playing well. I just don't see anything in him as a manager. I really do, and he looks nice to me. I don't know. He's probably a nice guy. It's not too much that you didn't want to watch the 5-0 defeat at home. Why don't you just watch Liverpool playing at home against Arsenal or other games? If you don't want to your own players to see their own defeat in the first game, fair enough. But at least show them clips of how Liverpool are setting up up front, how they're playing in the counter attack when they have the ball. When you just can't go into a game like that by not preparing it at all whatsoever, you know, and getting it completely wrong. Everything, you know, even if they hadn't conceded that goal after 2 minutes, they would have gone battered. They would have been battered because he got it completely wrong. And I think the players knew it from the start. And I think the players have lost faith in him a long, long time ago as well. And despite a few better performances in the last few weeks, like against Arsenal, for example, I think that was down to their own pride and nothing to do with Sherwood, his tactics, or them responding to him shouting at them after the Chelsea game, for example.
No, first game. Well, from one manager who doesn't apply detail to one that is dossier crazy, Brendan Rodgers. I mean, was this yet more evidence that he doesn't take anything for granted, Ollie? I mean, he switched to 4-3-3, I think. I think he could have played any formation against Spurs, but he's always trying to be one step ahead of the opposition, isn't he? And keep them on their toes.
Yeah, and one of the great things that when you're watching Liverpool, it's not always very clear how they're playing. I mean, they're so fluid, they're so fluent, and they move everyone around, and Sterling moves around, Henderson moves around, Coutinho moves around, and Suarez and Sturridge are constantly on the move, and it's just fantastic to watch. There's a real sort of sense of plan and structure to it. Yeah, I would say I've never seen a team looking, an English team looking so confident and playing sort of so far above what was previously expected of them.
Ooh, big praise. Mr.
I mean it, because if you go back to the start of the season, if you go back 18 months to sort of midway through or early stages of last season, it's largely the same group of players, bar Mignolet, who I think is a bit iffy anyway, Coutinho and Sturridge, and they haven't invested vast sums of money in this team. It's generally the same players, and what he's done with Henderson and Sterling and Flanagan and Sturridge is sensational. I mean, they are looking far, far, far better players than anyone dreamed that they would be. And Suarez is looking a far, far better player than anyone thought he was. I mean, everybody has always known Suarez is a brilliant footballer and that he can be one of the best in the world. But he has gone from, as Mourinho would put it, a top talent into a top player. I mean, it is legitimate to say he's, you know, one of the top five, potentially top three in the world at the moment. He's playing sensation. And I didn't even think that was one of his best games yesterday, but he was still jaw-dropping to watch.
Right, OK. Given all that, Clive, what would you do if you were Pellegrini or Mourinho and you're going to Anfield? How do you counter all that Oliver has just gushed about?
When did I become Oliver, by the way?
It's your byline. It's your byline.
You're called Julien, Jules. I mean, come on. and people, our esteemed listeners are going to be thinking,
who is he?
Ollie's had an Andrew Cole moment.
So, Clive, if you are Pellegrini or Mourinho, and you've just listened to Ollie's gushing comments about Liverpool, I mean, what do you do? What do you do?
It's interesting. City will probably be City as they normally. They'll probably still think they can take the game forward and try to possibly win the game at Anfield. I mean, Mourinho, He's better, you know, as I said to you the other day. It's the big games in which that bring out the best in him,
and it's what Mourinho said on Saturday.
Yeah, as I said, yeah, exactly. I mean, as I said to you, I could see it beforehand. It was an Aston Villa and a sort of West Ham moment coming up on that Saturday. And sure enough, it kind of came to pass. But so he may well adopt the attitude that of when he went to City, you know, because City at that moment were in their free scoring moment. And everyone hailed it as a kind of masterclass that they came away with that victory. So I assume he may well adopt the same tactics. But Liverpool, I mean, they, as Ollie said, they are devastating to watch at the moment. I mean, I realised yesterday was a bit it was just too easy for them, so it might be hard to judge. But in other games, they've showed no fear. They really have, and that's, you know.
What's their weakness, Jules?
I think it's a very unbalanced team. And I think it was always like that through the season. I was at the City game just on Boxing Day or just after Christmas, where they should have won it, but because there was that, their team was so unbalanced between the offensive and the defensive situations, if you want, they ended up losing that game where they shouldn't have lost it. And I think that's what will cost them against Chelsea and probably City, especially more at home. I just think they're so good going forwards, but they're so vulnerable as well defensively because they're so good going forward, that I think when they're going to play against City and Chelsea, especially Chelsea, Mourinho will prepare something just perfect to get them on the counter-attack and just catch them when they're all going forward. And even if, I agree with Ollie when he said that everybody's moving so much that they have covers sometimes, I just think that they're too attacking-minded and the balance is not there enough between going forward and defending.
If there's a way of keeping Flanagan and Johnson back
as well,
that could be the way to it, to stop Liverpool in their tracks. Because as I said, going forward, and funnily enough, we've been talking earlier in the season about how it was defensively that was going to be Liverpool's Achilles heel. I mean, when they concede goals, they don't just seem to concede one, they do concede two or whatever in a game, even to the likes of Fulham, you know. But they can't keep relying on the fact that they're going to score three or four all the time.
Public service broadcasting now, the Nations League, which has led to many a raised eyebrow amongst football lovers. It is the brainchild of UEFA, who say that they have taken on board all those football fans' complaints that international friendlies are a waste of time, and they're trying to make international games more interesting and have a tad more importance. So there will be qualification for European Championship places attached to this new league. They say, UEFA says, the reason is just to make fans happy. Not many commentators are going along with that. They feel that this is Michel Platini's way of seducing the smaller nations who don't feel they have a voice on the international stage, and he will need their votes if he's to be a bigger wig than he is in the world stage of football. Is that a fair summary, Julian? Am I wrong to be a little bit cynical about why this Nations League is about to come? Well, 2018, not about to, but...
No, I think you're spot on. Everything you said was just perfect. I just don't get it. I mean, my opinion is, not long ago, Argentina came to play in France in a friendly in February. Diego Maradona was the manager. Lionel Messi was at his best. I had friends who travelled from Paris to Marseille just to see Messi, just to see Maradona. That nation comes to mean no more games against South American teams, no more games against African teams, no more games against Asian teams or whatever. And if Michel Platini was just not thinking just about Europe, but also about the rest of the world, for those countries there, it's bad. So Brazil will end up playing friendlies with Australia and Japan and never against European teams. And European teams won't be able to play against other teams and just in Europe because of that national cup or national league or whatever it's called. I just think it's wrong from start to finish.
Well, the UEFA website says, don't worry, folks, or don't worry, Jules. They say there will be opportunities to play intercontinental. But it does make it sound like there would be few and far between. Clive, exactly. Are you a fan of this
notion? When are they going to do that? Because all these games, aren't they rearranging this kind of calendar that all these games are played in a block? So if you're playing the best of what Europe has to offer in that block, I'm assuming you're playing the rest of the world outside of that block. And that's what they're trying to avoid, isn't it? To making clubs angry who don't want to release their players for the so-called meaningless friendly. I'm interested, actually, Jules. Do you have this concept of the meaningless friendly? That is the phrase that is just so huge in this country. Because
Say it in French. What is it in French? Meaningless friendly.
So you would say match amical, which is friendly, and meaningless.
Oh, you're right, Clive, the concept doesn't even exist.
But no, because in France we think that any games, whether it's a friendly or not, has an importance somewhere.
Somewhere.
Even if you try new players, if you try new tactics.
And that's my point. You see, the whole idea of friendlies was that there was a chance to actually kind of experiment. It's when people go on about the number of substitutions made in matches and whatever. Well, that's because you're using that match to blood new players, to find out how they react. It gets a bit monotonous if you throw on about 9 players or something, or change the entire team. But that is the point of a friendly. You know, you don't want to throw in the likes of, I don't know, Ross Barkley or whatever it is in matches against, you know, in a vital European Championship qualifier, if there is going to be such a thing ever again. That's what the point of a friendly is. And I don't see the in this concept, there's no room for that. I don't like the idea. And what's the point of this championship when we already have a European Championship?
Oh, I can tell Ollie's a big fan, though.
Well, you're going to be surprised. I like the idea. I think something has to be done about international football, because I think it's just stagnated for years. I think it's been totally, you know, overshadowed by the club game, by the Champions League, and maybe this won't do the trick, but it's at least doing something. And I like the idea of countries playing against each other with something at stake. This promotion relegation idea, certainly having more of the top teams playing each other, I've got to say, it excites me in a way that the Euro 2016 qualifying draw doesn't.
Is this enough, chaps, for Platini to take over from Blatter? Is this his masterstroke? Is this a concerted political campaign?
I think he will get some votes
from it.
Yeah, from it, definitely. And I think he will get the FIFA job. I think he wants it. That was always his aim anyway. UEFA was just, you know, step in between to get to the top level. But just to come back on it, my problem as well with it is in terms of development for your country, because there will be 4 different divisions, you can assume that countries of the same level will play against each other in the nation league, which means if you play against a team that is your same level, you're not going to improve a lot. In the friendlies, you had the chance to play against a stronger team than you, where your younger players, your less experienced players, will get a proper game, will improve, because they will play against a much stronger opposition than them. If they play those kind of national league cup game against similar level as their team, they're not going to improve whatsoever. It'd be meaningless. In the way that some people think those friendlies are meaningless, but then they're not meaningless when you play against a stronger opposition, because you learn a lot. You don't learn a lot when you play against a team that is exactly the same level as you. You know, whether you're Albania and you play against Georgia, you don't learn anything. Whereas if you're Albania, you're playing against France or Italy, you learn much more than a game against a team of your level.
Well, it strikes me that it's a bit like Davis Cup tennis, and the only time people are going to get really excited about it is when your nation is relegated into a zone you don't think is appropriate. Right, time for any other business. Go on. What is your gripe?
So I thought hard about that since you mentioned it to me on Saturday at Sellers Park, saying, don't forget, you have to come up with something. So I did. And
what if we've all come up with the same thing?
I'll take you back to Sellers Park and that ball boy business, because I think Jason Puncheon actually got it really easy, because he's the one, when the ball boy had the ball in his hand, I came to see him and said, don't give them the ball back, keep hold the ball. And I'm sorry, I don't know Jason Puncheon, he might be a good guy or not, you just cannot teach kids to cheat. That was cheating. The kid was probably 10 or 11 or 12 or whatever. You cannot teach him to cheat. And I thought, no one mentioned Jason Puncheon, nowhere, even not Mourinho. Mourinho only said, it was not me who educated the kid to cheat. And no one mentioned Puncheon. And I think I see the footage again in my head, him coming to the kid and said, don't give them the ball back, hold on to the ball, I think was completely wrong. And you cannot teach kids to cheat.
And it's an affront to Jose Mourinho's Corinthian principles, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but, you know, whether it was with Mourinho.
Is it okay in your book, Jules, for Jose Mourinho to say to a young boy, don't do that again or you're going to get hit one day?
By Aspi as well. Of all people, Azpilicueta, he's one of the sweetest, probably the sweetest player they've got in the Chelsea squad. Of him, there was no chance he would have punched that kid. But, yeah.
Clive, what is your any other business?
I actually want to throw it forward to this evening, actually, and I'm kind of
which is Monday evening. If you're listening
Monday,
on Tuesday,
Monday evening. If you're listening afterwards, and you'll either there either will or won't be more booing for Sam Allardyce. I'm hoping there is, but one because I quite like Sunderland. I've got a personal affection for Sunderland. I haven't been there through my years of my life up there. I'd like to see them stay up.
How many years have you?
See, I went to university.
Three. Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. But to
Clive Petty's got a degree.
Yeah, I know. We can get them at Smith's these days. There's similarly, I've never quite understood this concept that people expect football fans are the only sort of paying customers that are not allowed to express any other sort of emotion or opinion other than cheering on what they're watching. You know, if Madonna turns up at a concert and sings out of tune or forgets the words, no one in the audience goes, "Yay, Madonna, you'll come through, play on." You know, I mean, West Ham fans don't like what they're seeing, and it's not enough for Allardyce to just say, "Well, look, why are you so disappointed? You know, I've kept you up." Well, that's a great thing, but you know, West Ham are actually where they should be, in my opinion, in that league. The fact that they were kind of struggling, basically down to Sam Allardyce a lot of it anyway. And so all he's done is actually get them to position where they should be. And for that, he thinks he should have the eternal gratitude of West Ham fans. They don't expect to win things or every season, whatever it is, but they do aspire to actually attempting to compete for trophies and having something that they might actually like to watch. And that's what they were expressing when they booed him.
You know. Well expressed, Clive, but I really don't see how, if your team is still technically, mathematically in danger of relegation, it can possibly help the cause to start booing when the players are still there and the manager's just got you three points.
There's this thing again. They're perfectly entitled to express an opinion, and that's how they did it. I think booing is the mildest form they could possibly have taken. They just wanted to express a point of view.
Ollie Kay, are you any other business?
On Saturday, I had a day off. I had some friends staying. We thought, well, busman's holiday for me. We'll go to a game, and we were looking which game we should go to. Rounded about near me, we decided to drop down into non-league. We went to Halifax Town against Luton Town, near top of the table in the Squirrel Premier, and it was a thoroughly enjoyable day. It was £17, which was more than I was expecting to pay to stand at the Shea, but it was, and the quality of football was not always wonderful, but we came away, all four of us, slightly fixated on Steve McNulty, who is the a name very familiar to fans of non-league teams, but particularly Luton. He is, when the game kicked off, because we got there just as it was kicking off, the game kicked off, and we were just looking, and we went, "God, look at the size of that number five." Just giant. Well, not giant in height. He was, enormous in a way you just don't expect players to be. He was grey hair. He was being heckled by the home fans throughout. Was responsible for Halifax's second goal. But looked like, you know, he looked like he could play a bit. Looked like he knew the game in a way that others didn't. But looked like a guy who was probably 40. Perhaps past 40.
I'm just looking at photographs of him, Ollie. He looks about 68.
Exactly. And so we got outside. We thought we'd try and find out how old he was. He's 30. He's an inspiration to us all. I think I advise everybody to Google Steve McNulty, Luton Town. Look at the size of him, the shape of him, the grey hair, the fact he looks like he's had a tough life, and the fact that he is still playing, and he's playing for a team that's top of the
coming to a league ground near you.
Yeah, coming to a league ground near you too, and it makes you think. You know, you can do it too. If Steve McNulty can, you know, he's an everyman hero.
Did you catch the song? Is there a song? He's big, he's round.
I was in the home end. There was certainly a very familiar song about size and pies and that kind of thing. that was the home fans. Nearly 4,000 people there. I would recommend everybody just go and check out your local non-league team every once in a while. And
Alison, do you have any other business?
Oh, thanks for asking, Jules. Apart from my hay fever, I mean, what is the evolutionary point of hay fever? Blossom on the trees, you know how I feel. It is
that from a song?
Yeah, well spotted. it's a personal thing. I had to watch Sunday's matches 80 minutes behind. So it's a wonderful thing, Sky Plus. So I started watching Fulham against Everton when, in the real world, 80 minutes are gone. Followed through to the Liverpool-Spurs game as well. And I found it utterly unbearable. There was a pact made in the house for the children that we would not try and find out the scores. So we were doing it as if it was live. And I don't know if I just, you know, please contact the show if you also feel this way. I felt like I had gone to a new partner's home and everyone had the in jokes and the stories. People knew things you didn't. I felt disparate. I felt out of control. I didn't like the idea there were a lot of people in the world who knew things I didn't know and that my emotions were behind time. It was utterly horrible. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I never, ever want to have to do it again.
Isn't that the case generally, that people know things that you don't know? And
No, it isn't. No. It was new to me, Ollie. It was new to me, Oliver. Many thanks to the guests today, Julian Laurens, Clive Petty and Ollie Kay. A quick reminder, each week you can catch all the Premier League action via the Times app. Download it now. Do contact us. Goodbye.
Your subscription to the Times and the Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.